Blog Talk Radio.
I'll be brief. I won't hold you up like some common thief. I'll get straight to the point. In no time, I'll have you up out of this joint. I'll be short. I won't keep you like you're in some jury court, waiting while debating which plaintiff case will prevail, or deciding which one will go to jail. Yes, I'll hurry. You don't have to worry. I'm already fixing to get ready to get ready to go. So before anyone hits the door, just remember, I still have the floor. I'm a poet, for those of you who don't know it, and it's been my real intention to show it.
Alafia, greetings and hotep. Welcome to Oracle's Readings by Omiinka 7 and Happy Kwanzaa. Today is Nia. Can you say Nia? Nia is purpose. That is the day, December the 30th for Nia, purpose, to make our collective vocations the building and developing of our community. And that's what we are subscribing to today. So those of you who are actively participating in Kwanzaa, come on in and join us today. Our topic today is specifically speaking to those administrators who help develop teachers. And we're talking about culturally, relatively, pedagogically appropriate curriculum for teachers that are training to become teachers in the urban setting, the inner city urban setting. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, we have to specify that these teachers must be trained appropriately to work in the urban settings. But are they getting that preparation? Are we being inclusive for cosmopolitanism so that we are working with indigenous, diversified students? Therefore, we've got to incorporate their culture. You cannot go in it from teaching from the various different people and instructors who might be a little bit out of touch with the urban society. And we're going to talk about how we've gone wrong with the 21st century teaching and not including what we have most available to us. And that is our students' access to hip-hop, rap, spoken word. All of these things must be used in the classroom to be in touch with the pedagogical philosophy of culturally relevant material. Now, why am I saying this? Being a poet, I know how important it is to use spoken word with your young people. I know how important it is to engage them in activities where they're immersing themselves in curriculum, not just sitting, butting themselves to hardware, but immersing themselves into activities that will cover them and they have access to touch and be able to express themselves through the spoken word as well as actively involved. So are you saying only that the curriculum for today's teacher is a little outdated? Yes, I am. And even at my age, I can stand here and flat-footedly say the curriculum we're using is outdated, and we must focus in on making sure that the child has developed a self-esteem, feels good about themselves, then no matter what curriculum Dr. Jawaza Kanjufu states that you put in front of them. If that child feels good about himself, he has good self-esteem, he will heed, he will accelerate, and he will advance because you have given him the ability to feel good about the fact that he can perform and master anything. Then why are we using these outdated curriculum talking about Piaget's theory, Erickson's theory, and using all of these methods that have gone out of style for the inner city child? The inner city child must be introduced to things that are indicative to his or her culture. one that he or she can identify with, where they can use their rap, their diction, and their many affluent words to express themselves through song and dance. That's right. If you would take any music class, you will see a child excelling. Even with the 148 students that a music teacher has, every child wants to go to music. And they're all in sync, and they're participating, and they're moving, and they are cooperating because it is a part of their right brain learning where they began to accelerate with the curriculum and activities. So we're building whole brain learners. And I want to say for the record, I am endorsing whole brain learners, analytical as well as creativity. And I know that our indigenous African children who are diverse can handle both analytical and creativity. I know this. I've had the opportunity of working with children in the classroom who are both in duality capable of doing this. Cannot speak down and against their raps, their music, and cut it out of the picture and denounce it, else they will sit slumped in their chair, slumped over, unengaged, uninterested, and do not want your lesson plans or your teaching, and refuse to learn from you. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, because we see creativity in the studios. We see young people come alive when they are recreating. We must create environments where they recreate and reinvent themselves. And we're going to talk about it today. Teachers, come on in here. I have something for you and you administrators too, because we have got to get curriculum people back on the drawing board to go into the classroom to jumpstart these teachers for the 21st century. Because they are not going to get through to these male channels that are diverse from the inner city. Because they come in with their hands popping and their jaw talking, and they want to be emotionally involved. They don't want to bond to hardware seats. They want to engage themselves. So what I'd like to share with you today is what I know best, how to motivate teachers. And that's what I do as a PD specialist. I help to influence them, to help them to engage and write their goals and objectives and feel good about it and be inspired. I can inspire some teachers, and I hope that I will inspire you today to understand that all curriculums have to go out, and we have to reinvent the curriculum that is going to energize and motivate that teacher to feel good about the lesson she's teaching while engaging her students. One thing I always remember that I had to do, every student had to learn an affirmation that would engage them with physical dances and gestures as well as oratory. Together, we got the hand jive working and the mojo working and the stepping working, and we would get the children moving in the morning. That will energize the brain. If that child is not excited about being there, you have lost that child already. He is in the back of the room with his hood over his head, and he hopes that you don't call on him because he is not interested in anybody's curriculum that is dead. We've got to inspire the curriculum. We're talking about pedagogy. What does pedagogy mean? And what are we talking about when we say our pedagogy, and these are the things we're using that are relevant to the curriculum? Most of us who come in the inner city don't know a thing about it, in black or white. And the reason why I'm saying this is because we have to have a curriculum that is student-driven. The student tells us what he needs to learn. The student influences us with how to write our curriculum. We can't go in pouring information in the student about the inner city when we've never lived there or we have not been a part of the streets. The streets is what ministers to them. When they come back and tell us what they need, then the curriculum should be written, not beforehand. Now, are we saying we're going to let these students come in with this jive and this rap and desecrate our classroom? No. Everything must be in decent order. No, they're not going to use profanity and slang. They're going to use their words, and yes, they're going to use Ebonics from time to time, along with Orthodox English. But the same thing holds true. You must understand the regularized codes and know that African Americans and other diverse children come to school with far more than 5,000 words because they have a street language that they must go by and a street name, and they have a rep that they must keep up, in addition to our Orthodox teachings in the classroom, so they know far more words than the average urban setting, the average urban setting child who's coming from the urban suburbs, rather than urban. The urban child comes in with far more words. And it has been said many times, well, the urban child that comes to the class has about 5,000 less words than the suburban child. Not true, because there are words that the suburban child does not even have a clue that they're talking with their Ebonics. In addition to the fact that some of these urban students have had to perform and orate and give dissertation for the Eurocentric and speak their language rather elegantly, in addition to speaking the street language. Now, we're going to get into reasoning about raps and why raps are very important to learn large sums of material. But I want you to understand that all of these things are possible, ladies and gentlemen, and we cannot continue this madness to produce an education that is not acceptable by our children and children who will refuse to learn. Now, being an African American means that I must learn to have expertise in teaching children from the urban setting. But I will say to most of you African American teachers that most of you might also be out of touch, like I was out of touch. That's right. When you come from a suburban area and you go into an urban area, you're out of touch. Then you come out with these fancy degrees and you think you know everything and you're ready to go to the urban setting and you fail at teaching miserably. You know why? Because you must bond to the child first. African children know the communal laws. They bond to flesh and blood. I like my teacher because she looks at me when she talks to me. I like my teacher because she's interested in what I have to say about my life. When we have circle time, we take precious time to find out how all of our weekends went, and we personally get to talk about our families and who we are. I like my teacher because she spends time with my family and she's concerned about what goes on in my home. They need the bonding. We can never think we could go in a classroom and reach a child at a distance. You must stay engaged, not only in the classroom with their didactics, but with their families as well. That is why it's awfully important that you must be trained to handle urban city children for a 21st century setting. It's very vital that you not get it confused. Multicultural is not in anymore. When we go in and put up a few pieces of art activities of multicultural and put them, their kente cloth all over the place and roll them in kente cloth, that is not multicultural. And when the child finishes his work and you hang it inside the classroom, that is not world vision. You must take that work and put it in displays throughout libraries in the community, throughout companies and organizations so they can become world vision learners. Children must be able to see beyond the classroom, and they must be able to access materials which you make available to them through streaming, other countries, learning about other cultures. That's what makes a rich curriculum, to have a diverse background and culture, not just your culture. And that's when you have a rich culture. And African Americans have been given a dumbed-down deal. Because with their rich cultures, it's been looked over. It's been looked over And they have not learned about the rich culture that they hold, that they can offer someone else to give them a picture of being on the inside rather than the outside looking in. It's very vital that you should understand this lesson, teacher. If you are going to be successful at any given moment with disabled children, challenged children, special needs, in diverse settings, but we must teach culturally relevant pedagogical philosophies and understand that cultural diversity is not enough. We must teach African-American children that they don't just have a heritage, they have a culture that must be shared by all mankind because the culture was started and began there in a land called Arcadia Land. Not Africa, that was a name given to them. The reason why we messed up on these religions is we have not been inclusive of our culture. We've left culture out of everything. Well, you need to leave that culture out. That culture cannot do here. We must include culture. Without culture, you cannot teach a subject. You have no geographical area or location to start from. It's very vital that you should understand that. The more culture you bring in and diversity, not just one Spanish culture where everyone is going to speak a Spanish language, but bring a multiplicity of languages in so that they can all see the rich languages that are available amongst all nations, Asians as well as our Africanans. It's very vital that we should understand that our boys learn differently. We do know that. Boys are not girls, and girls are not boys. I had to teach on this subject while doing my dissertation of the study of African-American males. I had to realize you do not handle females the same way you handle your males, and you must engage them to work with a male by the grade level of fourth grade. Otherwise, they become uninterested in listening to a female's voice. That's right. You lose them after fourth grade. You don't have to believe me. Go read up on Dr. Juwan Zakan Jufu's material on the countering the conspiracy to destroy black boys. He's got it all written out there. That's right. I have followed him, and I have also examined a lot of his material. And one of the things I would like to say is I have a few of my own philosophies in my concept that I write about the effect that females have on African-American males coupled with their culture. That's right. I have a hypothesis, and I have a pedagogical philosophy that I believe, since Dr. Juwan Zakan Jufu set the pace and indicated that there is a conspiracy going on amongst the system with black boys, I asked the question, but Dr. Juwan Zakan Jufu, who are the conspirators? He left it up to me to research and find. I spent 10 years looking to see who could be a part of this conspiracy and who was in on this job, only to find that it was right up under my nose with 80% of the female teachers in the classroom teaching. We had to be a part of the conspiracy. Knowing or unknowingly, we had to be a part of it because we were the ones to assess, to make referrals, and to send that African-American male to special ed. Now, that's where the story begins, ladies and gentlemen. As I began to do all this studying and understanding, why would we do that? For many reasons. And a lot of it, at the time, it was for ignorance and not understanding that we could keep that boy, African-American male or minority male, in the classroom and still done a good job with him rather than sending him off to be manufactured by many hands. Now, here's where our story is going to start. And I would like to say for the record, dealing with diversity is just the beginning. We have to be culturally sensitive to all cultures. I've seen in religions where dominant culture wants to reign, Yet we say we're diversified. We're diversified. We're diversified. But you only see one culture prevailing. And you have a culturally hijacking going on where you hijack all the other cultures and you make a mainstream culture. The only way you can do that if you have diversification of many strands of culture. And looking at culture doesn't mean that because you go to a Buddhist temple, now you must dress in Buddhist garment and you must shave your head and you must act like a Buddhist when you're an African. No, you must not alleviate or abandon your culture. You must stick to it. Whether you understand it or not, it is yours. It belongs to you. Research more. Find out more about your culture. Develop some heritage and respect for your culture. Then introduce it to your classroom. Don't go in there half-cocked, not knowing exactly what you are to teach, and misrepresent the culture and disrespect the culture. Then you've done a worse job if you've never tried at all. It's very vital that we should get this lesson because we are failing miserably in a classroom right now in the urban setting. The numbers of children in urban setting are failing at reading. And the first utmost thing that we must be able to teach is reading and understand how to build word vocabulary in a child so the child can articulate. When we have children going out of the classroom up into fourth and fifth grade and still can't read, somebody has failed that child. Somebody has failed to give a foundation of language and literacy and give a foundation of a love for reading. How can they unlock the doors for reading when they've never been introduced to phonemic awareness? And phonemic awareness must happen in the lower levels, and these teachers that are coming out with these profound degrees, they must know how to teach phonics. My God, the murmur diphthongs, the diagram, the consonants, the consonant blends, decoding and encoding. I never hear these teachers speak these words. And they go in and say, sound it out. But they don't rhythmatically use a beat like one, two, three, one. How many syllables do you hear in this word? Make it where it's a rap and it comes alive. And make the consonants make sense. When two rounds go out to play a game, the first one usually says his name. The second one knows he cannot speak. He usually goes to sleep. Sound off. One, two. Hit the verbs, the silent verbs, the silent E, the magic E. All of these can become alive for children at the age when they're still working from their right side of their brain. This is when you have the windows of reading open, not when they get to be fifth grade and they start to lock out the creative side. Now, why are so many of these children getting passed on that are African American who cannot read? It's because we don't care enough to take the time to enunciate words, to get them to spit the word out. Now, that's what African-Americans talk about so much now, spitting the rhymes. They've forgotten about our teaching, and they've learned to go in the back room and learn to spit some rhymes. And when they're spitting those rhymes, they are pushing out verbs, and they are using all sorts of nouns in unregularized ways that we have not taught them. And now we're bringing Common Core into the classroom. Everybody will learn Orthodox English. It should have been taught from the beginning. Why did we go to the look and say method? It never ceases to amaze me. Children walking out trying to memorize flash words, high frequency words, and not encoding or decoding any words. Now we have in most of our suburban settings where the children are pulled out and they're given all this time to catch up on their English and to learn all of their nouns and their verbs and how to use consonants and how to use blends. Then you go to the urban setting and nobody's talking about let's learn how to use a proper noun. And what is a proper noun? And how to use the contractions. And no one's teaching them these things in the urban setting. And then we go in and we further abuse by not acknowledging that the African-American children have shortened their words quite a bit, excuse me, to the point where they use fewer and fewer words. As you notice with the texting, there's fewer and fewer words that are being used. Why is that? At a time when we should be using more words, hold on, and I'll be right back at you in a minute. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I want to slow it down a little bit, and I want to see if we have anybody out there that has called in. You can call in at our number, 646-478-0270. We're talking about changing the environment for relevantly culturally sensitive material that must be taught to our diverse population of urban city children. Why aren't they getting it? Somebody please tell me. Why are we not bringing this culturally sensitive material to the classroom? We must take a little bit of the so-called poison to heal our communities with. If they're doing rap and we think it's so bad, maybe we could take the best of rap and bring it in the classroom to show you how it could be intelligently used to reach these children that we're losing. That's right. We're losing a whole universal of children that are sitting in the bathroom now. I don't even have to imagine it. You can close your eyes and imagine it, that there's a row of young black boys sitting in the back of the room who don't want to be bothered, who decide to check out for the afternoon, and they've missed all of the English lessons for the day. But you better believe they're going into the studio and they're going to spit some rhymes, and they probably can articulate more words than we could have ever taught them. They probably could have taught us a few words or two. So how do we reach them? How do we reach them, administrator? How do we reach them, superintendent? How do we reach them, curriculum specialist? What do? Do we throw the books out the window, or do we reincorporate and infuse history in the books? And I don't mean history, I mean history. That's right. And a lot of schools who knew that our books were lacking, they decided to infuse history back into the curriculum. You bring in those history books that mean something, that says something about the ancient kings and queens of their times and their days. And they are introduced to them, and they're shown a sense of pride. Do you know when James Brown danced, he danced with a sense of pride. He danced with a sense of dignity, and everywhere he went, he was held as the father of soul. Because once a person feels good about who they are, where they came from, there is no failure for them. That is the time when you will see those particular children heed and manifest the ability to perform at high levels. I know this because if you give all the students A's when you walk in a classroom and tell them that they have already passed and that they can only take that A away when they decide to, most of those children choose to succeed and pass. I know this because I've done this before, and I've seen children ease to the level. It's very important that you become personal with your students and personal to the point where you care about what they're feeling and what they think and allow them to express their very emotions and their most articulated ability to be creative. This is what we're pulling out of the children. It is nothing we can teach the children. We adduce the child by pulling out what's already there. You didn't give it to them, nor I. It was already laid at the time of formation when that child was entered into the womb. Their creativity was laid. A good teacher knows how to pull it out of them. You don't put anything in. You set your environment up to make it conducive to the urban settings. Are you changing your schools so it's conducive to the urban setting and not dwelling on the negative? Why are so many black boys being suspended? Why is there such a high suspension rate? And why can't we handle and deal with the problems on the inside of the school rather than suspending children, sending them home, and expelling them? That is a big problem as well. Urban city children have no business sitting at home doing nothing but twiddling their fingers and getting in trouble. We must find a way to unlock the door to reach urban city children so that we can begin to teach them a bit of the poison that we hate so much, the rapping. Begin to be a part of the musical rapping. Change our music department where it meets the agreement of the young children so that when they learn this music, they can go out and get a gig. They can go out and use it for something, not just a bunch of rhetoric singing. Black folks don't just sing to be singing. It has to be an occasion. If you notice, when they go into the chapel, it's an occasion to lift up spirits and to send the spirits high and soaring, or to lift up the lowliness of hearts during a funeral, or to lift up each other. But music must be used appropriately in the schools. We can no longer be without music departments in the African-American community. We must save our music departments, and we must bring them in while children each have access to musical instruments so that they can create and they can thrive. This is the urban setting that we must bring back to our community. We can no longer, Caucasian, come into a community bringing what we think is best for an urban city. We must sit and listen and learn and be able to observe and be able to gather information from the student that can best teach us. First of all, we must respect that child's parent, because that child's parent is the first teacher. But wait, we have so many foster care parents, that we just don't know who the parents anymore. Engage yourself with the foster care parent. While they are rearing those children, they are the parent at that time. But we must not be afraid to engage ourselves with the families. Have after-school activities and families where parents can show you how to be the best teacher, because they are the first teachers. It's very vital that this curriculum be redone again, and that we must be sensitive enough to know that we cannot leave that black child's culture out. We cannot focus so much on a Hispanic child and put him in shelter classes where he learns his culture while the African-American child loses his culture. We cannot show indifferences where that Spanish child is in such sheltered classes that he misses all of his regular classes and that he doesn't get to graduate because he doesn't have enough credits. We've got to even be sensitive to the Hispanic child as well. You cannot take him off and shelter him with all his culture and inundate him with all his culture and bring in everybody to talk to him about his culture while he's been so culturally oriented that he has no academic ability to heed. So we've done this thing all wrong because we try to discriminate in the systems and separate those that are different and that are diverse. And we must not leave those children out of the scheme of things. We must give those children an equal quality education. Now, you've heard so many times the miseducation of the Negroes, and that is what is happening. The education that we've gotten and we walk away with is not equal to the education that society will accept. It's not even enough to get most of these students into a position where some of the Caucasian children that get out of high school can go into management positions and go on to head up institutions with just a high school education. What is it about their education that's different from the African-American? Did they miss the memo, or did they not attend the class or the webinar? We're getting inferior education in the urban setting. And there's no two ways about it. I've worked in the urban setting, and I've worked in the suburban setting, and I know clearly the difference between the two. There's only so much money allocated for the urban settings opposed to the suburban setting. It's not about the money. It's about the commitment of time that you have to put in with these children. It's about the after-school hours that you commit to connect yourself to the families and to understand the culture and to better equate yourself with the culture. What is happening around the globe in the metropolitan areas is a misunderstanding of culture and underestimating someone from a lower socioeconomic area. We can no longer go on thinking these things and they're not correct, they're not politically correct, or they're not culturally correct to disrespect a person's culture just because they are not on the status quo of being equal to the financial level economically. It doesn't always take money to build something. It takes inquiring mind, and just like I've said many times, if we wanted to build our own institutions, we could bring those inquiring minds together and those astute minds without a business plan and without a whole bunch of money, and we could build it. We could create it. But you have to have the commitment from those teachers who have the gifts. That's right. There are a lot of us that are master teachers who have the gifts to induce the knowledge out of children and draw it out. You must have that special Midas touch to pull it up out of the child, to make that child feel good about him or herself, that he can heed and master whatever he put his mind to. Now, we're talking about training teachers. How do we get into the universities to demonstrate this to the teacher? It's not about how many A's you get and whether or not you're the teacher's pet. It's about whether or not you can relay a message to someone who's been locked out of society for a long time. And to be a teacher, you must be a perfectionist, and you must have humility. And those who win souls are wise. You must be a wise one to draw that person to you and collectively allow that person to see you as a mentor, to see you as a hero. Most of the children must see you as a hero and an advocate. I've been accused so many times, but, oh, they're doing it for you because you're their hero. You're their advocate. That is the first criteria for being an instructor, is to be an advocate and to advocate for justice and advocate for instruction and advocate for the child's best interest and to speak out against any injustice for that child. Here in this land, there's been so many children who have not found an advocate. They have not even found a reason to go to school or a reason to be in the system at all. So they checked out of school. They dropped out. You don't even have to push them out. They figure, why? Why go? There's no one there that cares. All a good teacher needs to do is express an interest in that child's home life and that child's mother and that child's father and that child itself. And that child will commit themselves to that teacher, and you can work together as a posse and meet each other halfway. But when you have no interest in that child's home life or that child or what that child's going through, that child thinks you have no interest in him. Learn from those rappers that come in class. Take them aside after school. Create after-school programs that are specifically for them to have their studio to rap about it. And observe what they're talking about, because they're giving you the pulse of the children, and they're crying out to you through their rap music to tell you exactly what is going on in the community. And when they say, what's going on, that's when they open up and give you what is really going on. You don't have to ask too many people in the hood because they all have the temperature of the time of what's going on. It's good to be from the hood, people. And young people wear a badge of honor that come from the hood, that come in the classroom. Those children are the well-trained people because they've managed to escape death and they've managed to get through the hood and be able to come into a civilized classroom. So we ought to take our hats off to those children. They've been through something. Now, you say, Mrs. Gott, but why are you cherishing these children who've been through something? Because it takes a skillful young man or woman to manage to work their way into a classroom after they come out of a jungle of the world. They have not made it that way. It is just so happened to be that way because they're in a, lower socioeconomic area that they're fighting through to live in two worlds. Why do we have to make them live in two worlds? Each day, African Americans have to make a decision. Which world will I live in today? Which hat will I put on today? Which face will I wear today? What makeup will I put on today? Will I be a tan face today? Will I straighten my hair today? Or will I tie it down? Each day we have to live in two worlds. Culturally relevant means you have got to be culturally correct when you are in a white world. You cannot come into a white world talking your job in their setting. It might not be appropriate, but there are some times where it's important for them to, for urban city students to bring their culture into a suburban area to explain how they live on a day-to-day basis, to let people know how many trains and how many buses they had to go through to get to the places. Just as a teacher myself, getting to grad school, postgraduate school, going through three or four different trains to get on the other side of Chicago was a nightmare and a story to tell within itself. So the things that urban city children have to go through are lessons that can be taught to other children who don't have to do anything but just get up and they got a silver spoon in their mouth and they're not struggling through anything. They can learn a lesson from the urban city children as well. There's a lesson to be learned. And out of every good situation, we can walk away with a lesson. And the lesson I want you to walk away with today, don't think that your degrees and credentials can make you ready to go into the urban setting because they don't and they won't unless you take charge and you decide to knit yourself to a community and be a part of a community so you can learn the pulse of the people. A good teacher coming into any setting always finds it their business to learn the culture and the nature of the community and what the needs are there and become concerned. And being a concerned and informed teacher will make you the prize of the community because African Americans are communal. They do things in a communal way. They are not numero uno, I, and they've tried to learn this concept, but it doesn't fit very well with them because they're communal people. And diverse groups of people and their culture cannot dominate and come from other cultures and get the things that African Americans are not getting, whose mothers and fathers who have slaved here in many years, and they feel shortchanged when others come from the outside and get their horse and a mule when, in fact, they still have not arrived yet. You must talk about these things in the classroom through your history classes. You must talk about how history has been written incorrectly, and you must right the wrong. I know every one of you teachers can't right the wrong, but do your part. The window is open, and it will only be open for a short period of time. While you have those children in your presence, make a change. And administrators, while you have teachers there, take away the arrogance and humble them so when they go in as a servant. We go to school to teach, and we become servants. We do not go there to be served. If any good leader is going to lead, he must learn to serve first. And that is my answer for all of the problems. Be a servant. Learn how to serve and humble yourself. It is a great opportunity to make a difference in the lives of diversity, especially lives that you don't know anything about diversity. It will help you to grow and to broaden your horizon. You don't need to go to Africa to learn about the ways and lives of the culture. You can learn that right here in the United States. You've got little Africa right in your backyard. And I want to say to the administrators, let the teachers step forward. Let them come forward and give examples of things that they would like to introduce into the system. A lot of the material that we're buying and purchasing, we can save that money and we can begin to show an example of other things we can do through spending valuable time with these students. It will do a better job of making them a well-rounded human being. And what we're not producing is character building. We want to build character in our students so that wherever they go, there is a certain manner and a certain ability for humility and humanity. So they have humanism when they go somewhere. They're more concerned about the human compassion of people and individual and not material things. We've got to stop buying